I know you're paying attention to global events as well as what's going on in our nation. War and increased conflict is bubbling up in more places. Countries are buying and hoarding massive amounts of gold. Why aren't you? It's time to pull the trigger with the Oxford Gold Group and buy gold and silver. Nobody can predict the future, but we can't put our head in the sand either. Call Oxford Gold Group right now, and you may qualify for up to $10,000 in free precious metals. Call 833-995-GOLD. That's 833-995-GOLD, 833-995-G-O-L-D.
Hey, it's Will Friedle.
And Sabrina Bryan.
And we're the hosts of the new podcast, Magical Rewind.
You may know us from some of your favorite childhood TV movies, like My Date with the President's Daughter.
And the Cheetah Girls movies.
Together, we're sitting down to watch all the movies you grew up with and chat with some of your favorite stars and crew that made these iconic movies happen.
So kick back, grab your popcorn, and join us. Listen to Magical Rewind on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Brought to you by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app, and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
Welcome in, Thursday edition, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. I feel like we say this a lot. There are a lot of different news stories that are breaking out there as the chaos continues to build as we move towards Election Day on November 5th. We are, what, 6 weeks and a week, six months and a week away from official Election Day on November 5th. And Trump is in court in New York City. He had an incredible reception from construction workers early this morning in New York City before he went into court. We will discuss that, including Trump saying that he thinks he can actually win New York and that he's going to have a big rally at Madison Square Garden. I will say the reception that he got from construction crew workers and the reception that he got in Harlem, it's pretty incredible how well he's being received in New York City. We will discuss that. But the biggest story, by the way, there's several other things that I'm fired up about this. I don't know that anybody else cares. There's an all-time low for babies being born in the United States. I don't know, Buck, if you pay attention to this. I know you and Carrie are married, and
we're working on number one. And yes. And you know, one thing we talk about is that we wish that we had met each other sooner. People used to ask me, like, why didn't I get married till I was 40? I was just waiting to meet the right person. I met the right person.
Yeah.
You're good to go. But we both agree. I mean, I think it would have been really nice to have met younger and started a family sooner. I mean, I think the you getting three kids going in your late 20s, early 30s.
I was 28 when my first was born.
And people, so I say all that just because I understand. I don't want this to ever be a do as I say, not as I do thing. But I think a lot of you listening who have families, some of you are not just parents, but grandparents, you already know this. Clay, we need a whole societal rethink about the way it goes. And I know we've got the big Supreme Court argument all morning, and we're going to spend a lot of time on that. But just, I think this is critically important. Elon Musk is a very outspoken voice on this as well. Now, he has like nine kids with a few different women. That I'm a big Elon fan.
Honestly, I'm going to give him a pass. We should have a fun conversation about this. I'm going to give him a pass because he's a genius. And I think geniuses should have as many kids as possible because their kids could save the world. So I'm giving him a pass. In general, I think people should be married to one person.
I think it's good that we say that. I think we're both giving Elon a pass for a number of reasons on this. And one is, I think he's doing more to keep freedom and Western civilization alive than, you know,
it would be.
I mean, you could argue him and Trump. I mean, you know, you start to look at who's at the top of that list. Anyway, we should be having more kids. There needs to be a rethink of the paradigm that has been out that I grew up with. I'll just tell you, especially in cities, it's different. Obviously, you have three kids. You got married younger. Clay, if you grow up in New York, in L.A., in Chicago, in any number of these cities, or you move to them when you're a young adult, it's get as far as you can in your career and don't even think about getting married until you're 35 or 40.
Yeah.
It's very common. And the numbers show this. It's not the way to do it. We should have families younger, and that would be one thing that I would do differently if I could, but I have to meet Carrie 10 years ago.
Yeah. Well, the headline, I give credit to the Wall Street Journal for actually covering this, and we will circle back and have a discussion, but the total fertility rate in the United States fell to 1.62 births per woman in 2023. That's a 2% decline. That is the lowest fertility rate on record since the United States began tracking this in the 1930s. Children are ultimately a vote on a positive belief for the future. That is what kids represent, babies in particular represent. And so the fact that fertility is at a 100-year low, we've never had it this low since the United States began to track it, is, I think, a really bad sign. But I think this is a huge topic.
I think it creates a lot of also societal dysfunctions. I think that people, and look, some people can't be parents. Some people choose not to be parents, you know, and there's a whole range of, and those are all fine. People get to choose their life path. But as a society, we should be fruitful and multiply. Like, as a society, we should be having more children, and it doesn't get talked about enough. I think it also goes into, you know, we're very quick to point out China's one child policy is horrific and inhumane, and it absolutely is. I mean, you add up that, I think something like 60 million babies have been aborted since Roe v. Wade. We actually needed more people. We actually need, I mean, put aside the morality of the lives, and I mean, that's obviously critical, but I'm just saying, demographically and as a society, America needs more Americans. This is a real thing.
Yes. And if you have the luxury to be able to take care of kids, I mean, I wish I had more, but I'm happy to have three, but I wish I had more. But all-time low for babies. All right, let's go into the Supreme Court case on presidential immunity. I think, is it still ongoing? Are they still asking questions right now? I think it's close. Basically, it's been going on for the last couple of hours. And Buck, I thought it went well for Trump, better than I expected. My now prediction for what's going to happen in this case is, and maybe I should take a step back and explain exactly what's going on. Essentially, the Supreme Court is considering a kind of a two-front question. One, can a president be prosecuted for actions that took place while he was in office? Second part of that, if he can, what is the extension of presidential powers? In other words, let me give you an example that I think everybody, Republican, Democrat, Independent, would agree with. If a president orders a missile strike on a terrorist organization in the Middle East, and the missile strike misses and hits someone else, the International Court of Human Rights law cannot charge the president of the United States with murder and try to drag him in to The Hague and put him in prison for that. That would be within the scope of his powers. Similarly, if, let's say, the Waco raid, which I think was totally botched, president orders the raid to take place at Waco, Department of Justice, FBI, everybody bungles it. The intent there is not to commit a murder. The president, I don't believe, could be prosecuted for murder based on the way that that act took place, right? I think in general, that would be an example. I tried to use one international, one national, because this has to do with particular national action as opposed to international behavior. But you would agree, I think, in general with that. That's within the scope of powers.
If we kind of build up from the foundation of what both sides agree on, and then you can narrow it down to where the dispute is, right? Both sides, Sauer and Dreeben. Sauer was Trump's lawyer. Dreeben was a special counsel. Counsel to the, so he's like a super special counsel. He's counsel to the special counsel.
He's basically a ringer for the argument.
Right. So Sauer and Dreeben, they made the argument. So Sauer's Trump's guy. By the way, I thought he was very sharp and very good. He did not seem flustered or to stumble to me one time listening this morning. But the thing they agree on, Clay, right, is that there are private acts for which a president absolutely is criminally liable and has no immunity. So to what we had discussed, if you bludgeon your secretary with a candlestick in the Oval Office.
Correct.
And she's on the ground, you don't get to say, well, I'm the president. Like, no, you are criminally liable, and there's no question about that. So then it's okay. There are official acts. Man, I said this is a little bit like with police have qualified immunity, right? They have a specific immunity while they're acting as police officers, as long as they don't break the law and they're acting in good faith. You can't just like sue a prosecutor or a police officer. I mean, you might, but it'll get thrown out right away. You have no grounds unless they've done something that violates their oath. You can't say, I'm suing this prosecutor because they're prosecuting me, right? That's not because I disagree with their judgment. So we get into the private versus public act distinction. And that's where this started to get really interesting because
fascinating.
Really, it seemed to me that the anti-Trump side, Dreeben's side, the DOJ side under Biden, was saying that even if you're doing something that could be construed as an official act, but you're doing it for an illicit purpose, a wrongful purpose, and no
wrong
you're doing
reasons,
it for-
as they would say on The Bachelor. You're here for the wrong reasons.
You're here for the wrong reasons. That's right. You know, you are not getting a rose for this one.
Yes.
If that is the case, you can still be held criminally liable for it. What I thought was really interesting was immediately Sauer was kind of countering this by saying, well, hold on a second. First of all, if a president can even be forced to go into a court and defend against these things, meaning if it's even possible to indict a president for official acts because of corrupt purpose in the official act, not anything that is done that is illegal explicitly, but because you don't like his reasons for doing it, then you can just constantly throw a president, you know, you can have prosecutors throwing presidents into the courthouse over and over again. The whole thing is a mess. So then we get into the narrowed position, Clay, and, you know, correct me or add in here anything if I'm missing it of, well, what about a situation where the president knows that what he's doing is wrong? We can prove he knew what he was doing was wrong, but the act itself doesn't violate, or the act itself rather would fall under a presidential power. That's where it's like, ooh, interesting. Am I missing anything here?
No, I think this is one of the most fascinating, difficult, and important Supreme Court cases, maybe on presidential powers that we've ever seen. It may be the most important. And
there's really no Supreme Court precedent on this specific issue, right?
That's right.
They are forming our constitutional understanding with this decision.
And really what I think they're going to say, Buck, is so the easy way to describe this is they're trying to figure out where the line is between permissible and impermissible acts as it goes to a president. We gave two examples. Your example, if the president picks up a paperweight and murders his secretary, that's not a presidential act, right? But if a president here with Trump says peacefully go up to the Capitol and it turns into January 6th, like, and he makes telephone calls to try to figure out whether or not the election was or was not on the up and up, where is the line where he could be prosecuted? I think what they're going to say, and by the way, let me I'm kind of tiptoeing up to this a little bit because I'm hedging, I guess. I think it's possible they're going to say this was not criminal. And 5-4, they say he can't be prosecuted for this. And they're not even going to say where the exact line is. But I think it's possible they look at this and say, it's possible the president can be prosecuted. This doesn't rise to that level. This is protected act within the penumbra, basically, his powers.
Okay, so you're going with, just to be clear, you're going with grand slam home run for Trump, upper deck, because that's the best possible scenario. 5-4,
they could make that decision. I think what they're going to do is say, we're not sure. The president does have some powers. We're not sure whether this violates it. We're going to throw it back to the trial court, and we need the trial court to analyze whether or not this is within the bounds of presidential powers.
That is what I feel very confident they are going to do. I think that after hearing the arguments today, I think door number two there, or possibility number two, is what they're going to do. But they will establish what is clear from the argument is presidents can't do anything. So that was a little bit of a, people were saying, well, the president is not in fact just above the law as a general concept. Now, that terminology
nobody
is
really
not helpful.
Nobody really bought that. I don't even know
no
that
one
there's
really
any
bought
vote.
That. But I'm just saying that a president can be prosecuted. So a president can't go out and just like murder a bunch of people in D.C. because he's having a bad day and then say, well, I'm the president. You can't do anything about it. That's actually not what.
Yes.
And neither side holds that, to be clear. It's just when the president is doing president stuff and we have to be able to determine.
And presently in office, this is important, too, because it doesn't carry on after he's out of office. Right.
Yeah. But if he's doing president stuff, while he is in office, unless he commits an illegal act, which would then fall under private, this is where they get into bribery, right? Bribery to appoint a ambassador was one of the areas they really dug into. So if somebody says, hey, I want to be ambassador to, what would be your favorite country to be ambassador to?
That's a fantastic question.
You know, I think Austria would be really cool. I mean, England would obviously be awesome. That'd be easy.
Italy, but, England. Yeah. And maybe if you just really want, like the Bahamas is probably not a bad place to be an ambassador.
I feel like
you don't have any real power
there after a while.
But Australia would be pretty great.
So if my friend Clay Travis decides, you know what? I don't like doing this huge radio show. I just want to go and chill. I'm going to give a bag of $10 million to future president so-and-so to become the ambassador to Turks and Caicos. If he were to do this,
I'd be in prison quickly there, probably, with the amount of guns.
Well, you get a long prison sentence there. But if he were to do this, clearly the bribery is a criminal act, even though it has to do with a presidential prerogative. So this is how they're trying to separate it out. The problem that they run into with the Trump situation is there's no him saying, you know, and we're getting into the details of the whole electors and you know, election challenge. The electors election challenge, just because they don't like it and they don't like the judgment Trump exercised in it, if it falls under a presidential power, they're saying he can't be prosecuted for it. Sort of like, you know, if the president lies to the American people and gets us into a war, for example, not prosecutable.
Yeah.
Because the lie is not a crime. If the president's like, you know, I think these guys are going to attack us tomorrow, and he said, all right, we're running.
This is important, but also factoring in here is if the president really does something so egregious, that's what impeachment exists for. So yes. The idea that the president is not accountable is, I think, the impeachment power exists for that exact reason. But this is, I mean, an unbelievably important and incredibly fascinating and significant case to be resolved, regardless of Trump, because it'll apply for every president for the rest of time.
AI-based companies, my friends, they're getting a lot of attention. Look what's happened over the last 12 months or so with some of those big AI stocks. They've gone to the moon. Few writers and editors like Mark Chaykin cover these companies so closely. And Wall Street knows that there are big moves down the line, but which direction? Well, you know, Mark worked on Wall Street for 50 years before he focused full-time on becoming a writer to bring you the most incisive, straight-through-the-noise information possible about market shifts, including AI stocks and all the hype around it. You got to know what to do to get in on this. Mark says most Americans are about to miss out on a critical turning point in this AI frenzy. He says this is a new dawn for U.S. stocks and predicts dozens of specific companies will be impacted in just the next 90 days' time. Go to 2024AIstock.com right now. Mark has agreed to share one of his favorite AI stocks to buy now with our listeners. You can watch for free. 2024AIstock.com, paid for by Chaykin Analytics.
The voices of sanity in an insane world. Clay Travis and Buck Sexton.
Why are people still on the fence about owning gold and silver? I just don't understand.
Have we already forgotten about regional bank closures, inflation, global instability, and the potential for serious world conflicts?
You can look to precious metals for various reasons. One, having tangible currency on hand as part of your bug out plan. Two, diversifying your portfolio as a hedge against inflation. And three, historically, gold increases in value over time.
You keep yourself informed about global events. You see the increase in conflicts around the globe. Countries are buying and hoarding massive amounts of gold. Why aren't you? It's time to pull the trigger with the Oxford Gold Group and buy gold and silver. Nobody can predict the future, but we can't put our head in the sand either.
The people with Oxford Gold Group are real pros. They make owning gold and silver simple and easy to understand. Call Oxford Gold Group right now, and you may qualify for up to $10,000 in free precious metals.
Call 833-995-GOLD. That's 833-995-GOLD. One more time, 833-995-GOLD.
Hey, everyone. It's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between award-winning mattress brand Leesa and home design favorite West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is the culmination of these two companies' shared values: premium materials, meticulous craftsmanship, and sustainable practices. Made with natural latex, responsibly sourced natural wool, and environmentally safe foams, the Natural Hybrid elevates your sleep sanctuary, indulges your senses, and supports a greener tomorrow. Plus, when you purchase the Natural Hybrid, you're also helping fuel Leesa's work with shelters and those in need. Since 2015, Leesa has donated more than 40,000 mattresses to ensure children and families have a safe place to sleep. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Leesa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit Leesa.com/iHeart. That's Leesa.com/iHeart.
All right, second hour, Clay and Buck gets going now, and we told you, give you a little update here on the latest on the campus. Gaza Solidarity Encampment, Clay. That's what the cool kids are calling it, a Gaza Solidarity Encampment. Who knew? Now we know. That's what they're saying. Solidarity, you know, like the communists used to talk about a lot, just saying. The Communist International, right? A lot of solidarity talk. We have Emory University. Chaos at Emory. Georgia police officers taking a bunch of screaming, kicking protesters into custody. It's also amazing, too. They all start, like, shrieking on these videos when the cops are, you know, putting them into handcuffs or whatever, completely freaking out. What did they think was going to happen? They act so surprised. The officer's like, I'm going to arrest you. I'm going to arrest you. You're not leaving. I'm going to arrest you. And then eventually they get arrested and they really throw a tantrum, and they look like a bunch of, you know, 4-year-olds who are about to get spanked or something. Like, they're really out of line, losing their minds on this stuff. And Clay, we've got Columbia, Harvard, NYU, University of Southern California, UT Austin, UC Berkeley, Brown, Yale. I mean, that's not exhaustive. University of Minnesota, I think, all those schools, though, have had this going on. It's remarkable what a contagious hysteria this is for these kids. I think a lot of it comes from the professors, too. And what's so troubling to me, or a lot of things troubling to me, the anti-Semitism, the ignorance behind all of this, but also I think it goes with how absolutely soaked top to bottom these campuses are in race politics.
Because
otherwise, why do people in Minnesota or Texas, and I say college, you know, college campus kids and also professors, why do they care so much? Of all the wars that have happened, Clay, of all the violence that has gone on in this world, let's say over the last few years, they care so much more about this one. Where were the solidarity protests, you know, against the Russian invasion? You know what I'm saying? I don't remember any kids screaming and crying on the campus floors about this one. It's because they think of this, as we've always said, and it's true, as a racial domination issue of the Israelis over the Palestinians, a racist invasion.
Yeah, and I think this is also important to kind of characterize. You can believe that these people have the right to advocate for whatever position they want, but you can simultaneously believe that you shouldn't be able to take over quads and start to camp there. That is a violation of property rights. That's a violation of codes relating to speech at universities. So I see some people saying, I don't want to cheer on the idea that you can't say whatever you want on campus, but you have to do it in a way, and the schools should, in my opinion, apply content neutral policies. And so an easy way to think through this is, what would happen if the KKK decided that they wanted to take over the quad at Columbia and they wanted to argue that black people are subhuman and not deserving of equal rights in the United States? Immediately, Columbia would clear them off of the quad, and they would expel any student that made that argument. Similarly, I think if you said, okay, we believe that trans people should be sterilized to the extent that trans people can even have kids because they're making awful decisions with their bodies. And also that gay people shouldn't have the right to get married. And you wanted to take over Columbia or NYU's campus quad, they would immediately clear you out. So my position on this is we need content neutral policies that are applied, and no one should be able to take over the central part of any university, put up tents, and reside there. And also, this is important, I think, a lot of these people are not students. And I think what they're discovering when they're arresting people is, wait a minute, this is some 27-year-old professional protester. And I am truly intrigued with where is the money coming for this suddenly to emerge? There is certainly a virality associated with it where some kid sees the Columbia protest and they decide, oh, we're going to try to do this at the University of Texas at Austin, or we're going to try to do this at University of Michigan in Ann Arbor, right? Like, you can see how that would spread. There's some viral contagion element, but also there's somebody writing the checks to allow this to have officially gotten underway in the same way BLM did. So where is sort of the puppeteer here deciding that they want to create this sort of unrest?
That's the kind of investigation that if the media was about giving the public facts, you would have a team of people at the New York Times looking into any funding sources. It has been pointed out a lot of tents that are the same appearing simultaneously at these events seems a little suspect to me. So yeah, but they won't do that, as we know, because they don't want people to know if there is any funding. And usually If someone were to ask me to guess where I think the funding's coming from, it would come from some NGO, and you'd have to dig a little more and you'd find, well, where's that NGO getting its money from? A bigger NGO. And where's that getting its money from? I don't know. The Emiratis, Soros, you know, there are a couple of ones that I could guess might be funding this NGO, but we're never going to know because they don't want us to know. They want to pretend that this is just college kids, you know, standing up for truth and justice. And to the point about they're playing a lot of games with euphemism and a lot of games with the language choices that they use here. As I've said, there was some of them are talking about Zionists. It's like, well, you're not just talking about Zionists. You're talking about anybody who lives in Israel, I guess they think is a Zionist. But there's a photo up right now. It's an AP photo with one of these protesters in Emory with a victory to the Palestinian resistance sign. And I would just say that for anyone who tries to claim they're not pro-Hamas, Hamas is the Palestinian resistance in Gaza. There's no other form of Palestinian resistance other than the terrorist entity Hamas in Gaza. No one else is resisting the Israeli military there. So they are in fact pro-Hamas and are rooting for Hamas. Many of them, whether they recognize it in those terms or not, they are. They are the useful idiots of a jihadist terror entity that would and does and is open about how it seeks the destruction of the Israeli state and the murder of all Israeli men, women and children if they could achieve it. And they think these are people that's who they want to go and cry about on the quadrangle. That's who they're shrieking and screaming about. These are their great heroes.
Yeah. And I don't know. I think many of these universities, we talked about this a little bit earlier in the week, are hoping that with the end of the semester, the spring semester and graduation, maybe this will die down. And it is funny, as you pointed out, that they waited until weather's good enough in many parts of the country to actually be able to camp. They care desperately about this issue, but not desperately enough to actually get cold. So now the weather's good. How does it end? And does this linger? I think this 100% is going to be a major issue for Joe Biden in Chicago in the Democrat convention in August. I think these crazy people are going to show up. I think they're going to protest. I think that they are going to make it almost impossible not to be covering the external noise that is surrounding Democrats in August. And will they be back on campus because the weather's still good in August and September leading into the election for 2024?
I think the Israelis are going to finish down. They're going to finish their operation in Rafah before any of that happens. And so then it would just be they're protesting what has happened and that doesn't, you know, had previously occurred. I don't see that being enough for them. So I think the Democrats may get a bit of a pass by the time
the convention. Here's the other question on that. You could be right. What happens if Iran or any other Middle East actor, whether it's Hamas, whether it's the Houthis, whoever it is, decide that they want to have an October terror attack against Israel? Now, it could happen in the United States, and that would certainly be an awful October surprise here. But it feels to me very much like the Biden administration and whether this becomes an issue is in many ways out of their hands, because they could dictate in to a large degree, potentially, what the response is going to be. And I think the same thing.
They don't want to go up against Trump. They'd much rather have four more years of Biden. Look at how he's trying to play both. Trump wouldn't be sitting here like, you know, Hamas, Palestinians, beautiful, love the resistance. Like, he would be slamming this stuff if he were president, right? He wouldn't play the both sides game.
So you wait, if you're Middle Eastern terror actors, you wait and withhold your terror attacks till after the November election, and then
if you are any actor on the world stage, terror group, opposition state like China, Russia, anybody, you would rather have Joe Biden for four more years than Donald Trump as president. Because you can run circles around
him. I
think
that's true.
He's weak. He's feckless.
That would be rational terror leadership to say, hey, we don't want to do anything that could help Trump in some ways. If they're rational actors, that would be a rational
actor. I think on issues like that, they are rational actors. And why aren't they firing more and more missiles? Clay, they could have done something, I think, far more devastating even than what they did with firing at Israel. Now, there was an impressive response. I'm talking about the Iranians now, an impressive response to shoot down all those drones and rockets in the air. But, I mean, the Iranians have cells. They have Hezbollah cells all over the world. I mean, they could conduct a terror attack at any moment in time. The reason they don't do this all the time is because they're constantly calculating, Remember the question. Trump killing Soleimani was, in foreign policy terms for Iran, the ultimate brushback pitch. Because I remember this. I remember in my years at the CIA being in the conference room, hearing about what's going on in Iraq, and always knowing that at the White House there was this concern, oh, we can't do too much, even though Iranian militias, Iranian-backed militias, Iraqis with Iranian training and money and weapons, are killing Americans. We can't get too, oh, we can't kill too many of them, or we can't go across the border. We're scared of Iran. Trump was like, you know what? If you're the guy doing it, we're going to take you out. That was a huge change. Sorry, you have a question, but that was a huge change when he killed Soleimani.
I'm going to leave a tease here because I'm curious what your response is on this. We just gave $60 billion more dollars to Ukraine, and now they're trying to desperately hold on to the line and avoid collapse. And there's now reports out there that Ukraine's issue is not necessarily armament. It's just that they don't have enough men.
Men, yeah.
What happens in Ukraine between now and election day, because you got war in the Middle East, you think that'll be resolved in some way. What about Ukraine? What if Russia breaks through the lines? How does that play? And or is there basically an agreed stalemate there with the understanding that if Trump wins, they're just going to have a negotiated settlement and Russia is going to take whatever percentage of the land they have
now? I will tell you what I am confident will happen with Ukraine and Russia between now and the election and thereafter.
We'll talk about that when we come back. And just a reminder, Julie Kelly joining us at the bottom of the hour to talk about one of the most significant Supreme Court cases that we have heard for sure in the 21st century. What will the result be? What does she think is likely based on how the questioning at the oral arguments went today? As it pertains to presidential powers. Number one fantasy sports app in America right now, Prize Picks. Easiest, most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. And if you haven't downloaded it yet, do it. Unlike other apps on Prize Picks, you against the number, players, not the teams. Look for the sports you know best. NHL playoffs underway, NBA playoffs underway, Major League Baseball pretty much every single night. Just pick more or less on any individual players on your favorite team. Every time you play 2 to 6 players, you can win up to 100 times your money on Prize Picks with as little as 4 picks. More player action, MLB, NBA, and NHL, all in action every night, as I just mentioned right now. 30 states, Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, California. You can get hooked up right now. You can play all over the country. Best way to get action, download the Prize Picks app, open your account, use my name right now, Clay, that's C-L-A-Y, you get up to $100 first deposit match. That is, you put in $100, they'll give you $100. They will double your money if you go to this website right now, prizepicks.com, and use my name, Clay. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Prizepicks.com. My name, Clay.
From the front lines of freedom and truth, Clay Travis and Buck Sexton.
All right, welcome back in. Our guest, you all know her, Julie Kelly, with us now. Check out Declassified. You can subscribe to that on Substack. That is Julie's publication there. It is excellent. I read it. Clay reads it. Julie, thanks for being here with us. I wanted to just jump into this. A lot of legal action going on today. Big Supreme Court case heard, going right to the heart of presidential immunity, the J6 case against Trump. Here is the headline from the New York Times. Wanted to have your reaction to it after hearing oral arguments this morning. Conservative majority seems ready to limit election case against Trump. Julie, I feel like I'm surprised that I'm going to have to say this, but from the New York Times lips to Trump's ear, I mean, to God's ears. What do you think?
Well, I think that they are probably right. And here's why. Because the big debate centered around official acts as president versus personal or even private acts. And there was a lot of discussion back and forth as to what represents an official act, what doesn't. And of course, that creates a whole slippery slope, which several of the justices, at least Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, Alito, had indicated serious concerns about, you know, who then becomes the referee as to what's official or a core function versus political, personal, private. And so going back to the indictment, and I really need to underscore this claim, Buck, we're talking about four counts. Okay. They talked a lot about murder. They talked about bribery, about initiating a coup, killing people. That is not what this indictment is about. It's really important for people to be reminded. We're talking about four of the most vague statutes on the books, two of which we talked about last week in the Supreme Court address, 1512C2, obstruction of an official proceeding, extremely vague, and then two very vague conspiracy statutes. So these are not clear-cut laws, crimes, murder, bribery, drug trafficking, the things that we would expect a president to face criminal prosecution for. So in the indictment, there are certainly elements that are completely within the president's purview, such as replacing an acting attorney general with somebody else, which is what he considered replacing Jeffrey Rosen with Jeffrey Clark. There are other things that fall under official acts. Things get a little murkier. Even John Sauer, who is representing Donald Trump, admitted that, okay, calling, using private attorneys, calling up political parties or officials, you know, to conceive or encourage them to come up with alternative slates of electors that might fall under personal slash political. So I think that that's what the New York Times and others are hinting at, is that the indictment itself could have to be narrowed down, determining whether it's Jack Smith or this gets kicked back to Judge Tommy Chutkin, who was the one who originated the order denying immunity. And then she has to figure out official versus personal, hold some sort of evidentiary hearing to determine what falls under official, what falls under personal or private.
My biggest takeaway for the particulars of the timing here, Julie, is that there's virtually no chance now that any case other than the case that is currently proceeding in New York City is going to be decided before November 5th. That is a jury ruling. Based on the arguments today, and there are a lot more issues at scope than just Trump, and we'll maybe get to that with you in a sec, but would you agree with me that it's Alvin Bragg and then it's to the voters in terms of lawfare and what's going to be complete?
I do. I mean, we still obviously have the Southern Florida case prodding along, but, and there is a slim possibility that could go to trial before the election. But look, Clay, to your question, if the Supreme Court kicks this back to the district court, to Judge Chutkin, and says you need to hold these hearings to figure out what falls where, they also will have some choice words for the circuit court. I don't know if you guys caught that. Chief Justice John Roberts, not pleased with that three-judge panel's decision, calling it tautological, basically circular reasoning that they used to uphold Judge Chutkan's ruling. So if they kick that back, Clay, let's say they do wait until the end of June or even the end of May.
Sorry to cut you off, by the way. I wouldn't be stunned if they put this a ruling come out on July 3rd, the day before the July 4th holiday, just to kind of bury it into that. Sorry to cut you off. I was looking at the calendar. That's kind of, it's the last case they're basically hearing. That could be a possibility if they wanted to hold it as long as possible.
True. That the end of their term is June, but to your point, Clay, they can issue orders, I believe, after that. So let's say that they do, kicks back to Chutkan, after 4th of July week is over, and she immediately orders, we're going to hold an evidentiary hearing 2-3 weeks after that. You have to file your motions, responses, et cetera. They really start to run out of time. But I'm going to posit something even more terrifying than what we've talked about is going to trial in J6 before the election, is putting Donald Trump on trial after the election. Just imagine for a moment that they have the evidentiary hearings. Chutkan decides, okay, this part of the indictment, these acts are official, these aren't. It gets, runs the gamut. And then they toss it back. Okay, this is settled. He can go on trial for private personal acts, and here are the ones that we determined. Then can you go to trial the end of November, December, early January, even if Trump wins, especially if he wins? That's another nightmare scenario that could be created by.
But he would be able to pardon himself then in that case if he won, even if he potentially got convicted. But you're right. I mean, this is honestly, I don't know why we still do this. I don't know why we have such a long period. What you're hitting at, Julie, November 5th until January, I'm not sure, 20th or whatever the date is when the officials. 20th. Yeah. I mean, that's a long time for a defeated president to remain in office. Historically, it used to not be till March, but that was because you had to travel long distances.
It's also time, they have a transition that they're trying to prepare for. And, I think it's meant to ease the situation. And they didn't prepare for 4, now going on really 5. Criminal indictments against one of the candidates to be a part
but
of.
But I mean, I think that like kind of abeyance area there is kind of a mess, as Julie's pointing out.
Can I ask you about, this is another one of these things. It's kind of buried today. It's a big deal on any other day, but the Supreme Court arguments about whether the president could order a coup and effectively undo the constitutional order or not, et cetera, are pretty interesting. But 11 of the electors have been indicted in Arizona. The Arizona AG put out a video today, Chris Mays. What do you make of this? Like, they didn't indict Trump, they indicted Mark Meadows. And, it seems to be somewhat in parallel to or somewhat similar to the Georgia case, at least in terms of some of the conduct. What do you make of all this?
I mean, look, I tweeted this last night, and I hate to say it. You have to envy how Democrats understand how to coordinate, conspire, and leverage their political power. Here's a guy who probably really didn't, or a woman who really probably didn't even really win the Arizona Attorney General's race. But it doesn't matter, because as soon as they take office, they leverage and weaponize their power against their political foes. I haven't had a time to go through the whole indictment, just getting ready for today. But, this is Georgia, this is Michigan, this is all to bolster the idea. But even though Trump is unindicted co-conspirator, it is to bolster what's happening here in this J6 federal case. And it's also a signal, and we heard a little bit about this today. Amy Coney Barrett really is disappointing. But to continue to raise the idea that asking for or having others create alternative electoral certificates is a crime, which it hasn't. The National Archivist told Congress, we get fake electoral or manufactured, made up alternative electoral certificates every presidential election. This is not new. So to criminalize it is also to warn people, if you protest in any way, the 2024 election, whatever happens, whatever stunts you want to pull, whatever you want to do to demonstrate against let's say Joe Biden gets reelected, we are going to use our lawfare against you. And there's nothing to stop them. So this is really to, I think, add more optics, bolster the political and public view that there's something really criminal about concocting or pretending that you're, you know, sending in an alternative electoral certificate. Just ridiculous. But so, again, such a dangerous dissent where we are headed using this lawfare, not just federally, but state power, too.
Julie, last question for you. You mentioned South Florida. You've been covering that case. Judge Eileen Cannon has allowed a large amount of previously censored materials to be allowed to be displayed publicly. What should we know that is significant about what that has uncovered?
We should know, and I want to give kudos again to Judge Cannon. I know we've talked a lot about her, but it reveals, and this is why Jack Smith wanted all of this concealed, it reveals Joe Biden's White House, including some of his top attorneys in his general counsel's office, working collaboratively with the DOJ and archives to manufacture a records/documents case against Donald Trump. This completely flies in the face of what Jack Smith has alleged in his indictment there, but also what we've been told that Joe Biden and his White House is completely hands off from this prosecution. So they were deeply involved, same players, DOJ, FBI, the archives, the intelligence community. This is like getting the Russiagate, FISAgate band back together. So kudos to her. There's going to be more unsealings today. I will be posting later, Julie_Kelly2, which is the grand jury transcript of the Joaquin Nauta, Trump's close personal aide, also who has been charged in that case as well.
Julie, the grand jury, we should mention, by the way, Buck, that took place in Washington, D.C., before they then flipped the proceeding all the way down to South Florida, so yes, that Judge Cannon wasn't in charge of this.
Julie Kelly, yes, Substack, you can all subscribe. Why. Julie, real quick, before I let you go, I know Clay said last question, but I'm throwing in a last question because I'm really curious.
Right.
What do you think the biggest legal risk for Trump is now of all of the cases and scenarios?
I mean, right now, I have to think what's happening in New York, unfortunately.
I thought you might say that because Clay and I were just talking about that. This actually, I think what we see happening puts more pressure on them to get even crazier in New York City, where they just have full control and there's really no oversight. Go check out Julie's Substack, everybody, Declassified. Julie, always appreciate you being with us.
Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Look, despite everything the Fed has been trying, we are still feeling the effects of inflation. Whether you're filling up your car, grocery shopping, making home repairs, everything is more expensive. And most of the time, we use a credit card to pay these bills. Credit card debt is at an all-time high. If you're a homeowner, there's a way out. Call our friends at American Financing. They can put together a plan to pay off that high-interest credit card debt and create meaningful savings for you every month. They're saving people just like you an average of $854 a month and closing in as fast as 10 days. Call their salary-based mortgage consultants today. It costs nothing to get started. And if you start today, you couldn't delay two mortgage payments, giving you greater savings up front. Dial American Financing at 800-777-8109. That's 800-777-8109 or visit AmericanFinancing.net. That's AmericanFinancing.net, NMLS 182334, NMLSConsumerAccess.org.
Need a break from politics? A little comedy to counter the craziness? So do we. The Sunday Hang, a weekend podcast to lighten things up a bit. Find it in the Clay and Buck podcast feed on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Why are people still on the fence about owning gold and silver? I just don't understand.
Have we already forgotten about regional bank closures, inflation, global instability, and the potential for serious world conflicts?
You can look to precious metals for various reasons. One, having tangible currency on hand as part of your bug out plan. Two, diversifying your portfolio as a hedge against inflation. And three, historically, gold increases in value over time.
You keep yourself informed about global events. You see the increase in conflicts around the globe. Countries are buying and hoarding massive amounts of gold. Why aren't you? It's time to pull the trigger with the Oxford Gold Group and buy gold and silver. Nobody can predict the future, but we can't put our head in the sand either.
The people with Oxford Gold Group are real pros. They make owning gold and silver simple and easy to understand. Call Oxford Gold Group right now, and you may qualify for up to $10,000 in free precious metals.
Call 833-995-GOLD. That's 833-995-GOLD. One more time, 833-995-GOLD.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between award-winning mattress brand Leesa and home design favorite West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is the culmination of these two companies' shared values: premium materials, meticulous craftsmanship, and sustainable practices. Made with natural latex, responsibly sourced natural wool, and environmentally safe foams, the Natural Hybrid elevates your sleep sanctuary. Indulges your senses and supports a greener tomorrow. Plus, when you purchase the Natural Hybrid, you're also helping fuel Leesa's work with shelters and those in need. Since 2015, Leesa has donated more than 40,000 mattresses to ensure children and families have a safe place to sleep. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Leesa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit leesa.com/iHeart. That's leesa.com/iHeart.
Nowadays, $20 barely gets you a burger and fries or maybe a quarter tank of gas. You know what it will get you, though? For $20 a month, you can get unlimited talk, text, and plenty of 5G data from my cell phone company, Pure Talk.
You'll get the same quality of service as AT&T, Verizon, or T-Mobile, but for half the cost. The average size family saves almost $1,000 a year, all with no contracts and no activation fees. You can keep your cell phone number and your phone, or get great deals on the latest iPhones and Androids.
Make the switch today and save an additional 50% off your first month. Choose a wireless company who shares our values, who supports our military and veterans, creates American jobs, and refuses to advertise on fake news networks. Go to puretalk.com/buck to switch today so you can actually afford that burger and fries. That's puretalk.com/buck.
Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. We go now to the state of Florida, the Surgeon General there, a man named Dr. Mark Latipo, who got almost everything, Joseph Latipo, man, I'm trying to give him a huge, great lead-in, got almost everything right on COVID, and Dr. Latipo, we appreciate you coming on with us. I know that that you are super busy, but what in the world is going on with all the people still wearing masks all over the country? I mean, what do you think now when you see a young person still wearing a mask on an airplane flight or going in or out of a shopping mall or something like that, or even worse, standing outside somewhere as we see a lot of these protesters? As a doctor and also just as a human, what are your thoughts?
Well, it's complete mystery to me too. And actually, recently, there's a doctor at UCLA named Dr. Catherine Sarkeesian, and she's a practicing doctor there. And she did something that I'm so glad she did. She talked to some of her medical residents, physicians in training, who are wearing masks. And it turns out, it seems like some people, they just like to hide their face, which is a really sad testament to humanity and where we are right now with just how people have dealt with all the stress and all the social media disconnection and all the craziness. But they're part of the reason seems to be that some people like to hide their faces. Obviously, some people are still afraid and think the mask is going to help them, which is total nonsense, and that's really sad. But there is this phenomenon now, it seems, where people are trying to hide.
Dr. Latipo, appreciate you being with us, and we always deal with the ongoing surprise, I think, here that there has just been absolutely not only a total lack of accountability for people who got a lot of this stuff wrong, but not even an admission of what was wrong. I mean, the authorities in so many places in the government, specifically CDC, NIH, they still, it seems to me, officially have a claim that masks do work. Where does that stand? Like, if I were to go on the CDC website right now, are they still sticking by that, or are they just hoping nobody notices? What is official medical apparatus guidance?
It's very sad. It's exactly what you're saying. They actually continue to advocate for mask wearing on the CDC's website. and they continue to ignore all of the clinical trials, which either show no benefit or such a small benefit that it's not even worth talking about. And just they focus on these lower quality studies that show these enormous benefits, which are just completely specious. And it's just so sad. And I can't wait till we get that leadership out and get some people who have more integrity into leadership at the CDC.
Do you feel like any of the people who got everything wrong are ever going to have to bear consequences for getting everything wrong? And just to kind of reiterate for people out there who have forgotten, if I remember correctly, your story is you were at UCLA, you've got a young family, you recognize that they were not in danger, and you started to speak out, and that's how Governor Ron DeSantis found you, and he said, man, we need this guy, and so you moved your whole family across country. And so correct me if I'm wrong on all that, because I do think your bio here and your life story matters in that respect. And how much better, I'm just curious, do you think your family's life has been as a result of that move that you made from California to Florida?
Oh, so much better. And, you know, California is a beautiful state, a beautiful state. Florida is beautiful, too. But California is a beautiful state, and they're ruining it. I mean, it was terrible during the pandemic. By the time Florida was, you know, people were living their lives here in Florida, and we were still in California dealing with hospitals. Even right now, my friend Dr. Vinay Prasad at UCSF, they're still masking in their hospitals. You know, the hospitals masking, the Uber drivers masking, all this total nonsense, the social distancing crap. And, you know, here in Florida, we don't have to think or worry about any of that. And we didn't have to do it, you know, 2 years ago, but we really don't have to do it now, thanks to legislation that Governor DeSantis has pushed through and signed. I mean, it's like it is dead. All that crazy stuff, the crazy mask mandates, the vaccine mandates, it's all DOA dead here in Florida.
We're speaking to Dr. Joseph Latipo. His book is Transcend Fear: A Blueprint for Mindful Leadership in Public Health. What do we do about the fact that, I mean, Dr. Latipo, if someone comes to me, and we're obviously having you on because we think you and the state of Florida, where I am a proud resident, are an exception to this. But if someone were to come to me and say, can I trust public health authorities in general? And then they laid out all the reasons why they may not. I don't have any answer to that. I mean, the fact that there has been not only, as I said, a lack of apology, but a lack of willingness to deal with the data as it stands now, which is irrefutable in the with the conclusion that masking is a joke, lockdowns were horrible, school shutdowns were a terrible idea, no benefit from it whatsoever. Vaccines didn't work nearly as well as they said that they would if they really barely work at all. They won't admit anything. So why should people trust public health? I mean, you wrote a book about leadership. I mean, if I were president, I'd be like, maybe we scrap the CDC and start all over.
Well, the rational thing to do, of course, is not to trust them. I mean, why would you trust someone who has repeatedly lied to you, hidden information from you, like when they hid information about myocarditis, tinnitus, which is the ringing in the ears that happens after for some people and can be devastating, unfortunately. I mean, really devastating. Some people feeling like they can't even continue with their lives because of this constant ringing that they experience in their ears after taking these mRNA COVID-19 vaccines. But why would you ever trust someone like that? That's completely insane. And it's a double tragedy. It's a double tragedy because they do some things correctly. I mean, it's not in COVID, but there are other things that the CDC does do correctly. But because of all this integrity that they've spent and have no more of, people can't, you know, it is completely rational for people not to trust anything. So people will miss out on the good things that they do because they're trying to avoid the bad things and the harm that they've done. So it's obviously the sensible, rational thing not to trust someone who lies to you and who hides important information from you and who doesn't think that you are mature enough or have enough station to make decisions for yourself about your lives. I mean, that is clearly the rational thing to do in that type of relationship.
I'm just curious, and again, I'd encourage everybody to go check out your book, again, because you were right on so much having to do with COVID. Has anyone privately in the science community approached you and said, you know what, I bought into the fear. I thought you were crazy in 2020 and 2021, but it turns out you were right. Are you getting any of that behind the scenes, or do you think the people who now recognize they were wrong to support shutting down schools and wrong to support two-year-olds getting COVID shots that had almost no impact and kids having to wear masks in schools, do they all just want to pretend none of this happened? I'm just curious behind the scenes whether anyone has acknowledged, you know what, you guys got it right in Florida, you got it right with your medical diagnosis. Or are they just now not saying anything? What are you experiencing, not only publicly, but maybe privately in the science community?
Yeah, sure. So I've got a note right now that I'm looking at, and it really warms my heart. It's a PhD professor at a university, a large university in central northeast, north United States, who thanked me for, you know, sticking to the science. And, you know, she wrote a nice long note. I've never met her before, but it's a sweet note. And I do get those. And I, those especially when they, I mean, I appreciate them from everyone, scientists or non-scientists, but especially when I get them from scientists, it gives me some hope. Cause sometimes I do feel like, oh my gosh, you know, could I be wrong? You know, I mean, I'm not here on the ledge, you know, alone or with very few colleagues, Dr. Peter McCullough, Dr. Harvey Reese, Dr. Robert Malone. So that does hearten me, but for the most part, and I hate to say it, but it's partly, I think, because of the effects of these mRNA COVID-19 vaccines, most of the people who have to know that they were incorrect, they're just unable to get out of that box and, you know, come to the present and come to reality and own up to what they've done. And I do think that it is at least partly due to, you know, as wild as it sounds, to these mRNA COVID-19 vaccines. I think it's affected some people's way and ability to think.
Joseph Latipo, Dr. Surgeon General of Florida. Go buy the book. Go read it. Transcend Fear, A Blueprint for Mindful Leadership in Public Health. Doctor, we appreciate all the times you come on the show. Most important, Buck and I, we really appreciate the fact that you were honest, you were forthright, and you've been proven correct on so many of these issues. You and both Governor Ron DeSantis, thank you.
Hey, thank you guys so much. Thank you for what you guys do, too.
Check out that book. Look, are you like Biden? Do you sometimes think to yourself, 4 more years, pause. Would you go Ron Burgundy and read right off the teleprompter because you don't have the vim, vigor, vitality to just be able to get through the day? Are you already in bed sometimes by 5 or 6 o'clock like our fearless chief executive, Joe Biden? Maybe you could handle and need a little bit more testosterone in your life. That is what Chalk does. They will get your overall testosterone level, which is the engine that drives the male body, up 20% in 3 months. And that will help to erase. You know, that I saw this stat, our friend Isabel, what's her last name, Allie? Look her up. Isabel, who had the book about Gen Z. I was watching a video from her on Instagram. She said the average American, Isabel Brown, that's right. She said the average American male in his 20s today has the same level of testosterone that a 70-year-old had 60 years ago. That is crazy. That's scary, Buck. That is scary to think about when you really kind of break it down, that we could have ended up in that situation at all. And Chalk will help to handle that for you. They've got a supercharged spring sale on any subscription for life. Go to chok.com, use my name, Clay, C-L-A-Y, as the promo code, and you'll get hooked up in a big way at chok.com. That's chok.com, promo code Clay. Get hooked up with some testosterone in your life so you don't walk and talk like Joe Biden. Chok.com.
Hey, have you ever used Cheapo Air?
For years, and I really like it. With Cheapo Air, you can book online, use their app, or even over the phone. They've got great prices on over 500 airlines and millions of accommodations. They're my go-to for travel planning. And if you join their Club Miles program, you can earn points to save on the cost of your travel. Book on the app and you get double points.
Sounds like it's time I tried Cheapo Air.
Call Cheapo Air at 855-247-3279 or visit cheapoair.com/podcast.
So I know you've got a lot going on, but remember, I'm here for you. So bother me when no one's listening, because I will. Bother me when it feels like it won't get better, because it can. Bother me because you're never a bother. Whether it's a low point or a crisis, get help for yourself or a friend. Learn more at neverabother.org or call or text 988, available 24/7.
Nowadays, $20 barely gets you a burger and fries or maybe a quarter tank of gas. You know what it'll get you, though? For just $20 a month, you can get unlimited talk, text, and plenty of 5G data from my cell phone company, Pure Talk. Make the switch today and save an additional 50% off your first month. Choose a wireless company who shares our values.
Go to puretalk.com/clay to switch today so you can actually afford that burger and fries. That's puretalk.com/clay.